You're listening to After Images, a podcast for cinephiles that takes a deep dive into moving images. Each episode features a special guest who is invited to explore a film of their choice. After Images is hosted by film writers Franck Bouleg and Marisa C. Hayes.
On today's episode, our guest Tina Romero tells us why Hedwig and the Angry Inch meant so much to her. The 2001 musical comedy drama was written for the screen and directed by John Cameron Mitchell, with original music by Stephen Trask, based on their 1998 stage musical of the same name. The film follows Hedwig, a genderqueer East German rock singer, and her backing band as they shadow Tommy Gnosis's tour. Tommy, who was discovered by Hedwig and was in a relationship with her for a while, stole her music to become a very successful rock star. Beautifully shot and performed, the film pays tribute to its illustrious predecessors. One can't help but think of cult rock operas like Tommy and foundational queer classics like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, while keeping a tone that's clearly its own, incorporating glam rock and punk, paying tribute to David Bowie and Iggy Pop.
Tina Romero is a filmmaker, writer, and DJ living in New York City. After earning her BA in cinema studies at Wellesley College, she attended the NYU Tisch Graduate Film Program, where she won the Warner Brothers Film Award for her accomplishments in filmmaking. Tina's greatest influence in film and in life is her father, George A. Romero. She serves as vice president of the George A. Romero Foundation, honoring his work and his legacy. A self-described edgy cheeseball, she's a Gilmore Girls fanatic with an affinity for chomper films and movie musicals. As a director, Tina works from a place of care, welcoming her audience to surrender to an androgynous, curated, whimsical world far away from the everyday. So, Tina Romero, welcome to After Images podcast. We're delighted to have you here today to discuss John Cameron Mitchell's Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes. Oh, hi. I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy to discuss one of my favorite films.
Awesome. So we usually like to begin with a simple question, but it's actually not that simple because for a lot of people, it's really complex and it brings up a lot of memories. And that is, what does this film mean to you? And can you kind of set the stage for us and let us know about maybe the first time that you watched Hedwig?
Absolutely. And it was such a delight to watch this film. I just watched it again yesterday, actually, to get ready for this podcast. And I was just overwhelmed with the sweetest nostalgia watching this movie. And it took me right back to the time when I first saw it, which was the year it came out, 2001, a very big year for us in America. And I was in high school. So I'm at the end of my high school era. I believe I was a senior in high school, which is also where I found myself on 9/11. And this film just excited me beyond belief. It was unlike anything I had ever seen in that it was doing something different with narrative. You know, it sort of took narrative storytelling and said, we don't need to tell a story like this. We can fuse cinema. I had seen movie musicals before, of course, but this one is different. Like it lets you settle in the emotional place, and it takes time to sit in these songs and like get to know Hedwig through the performances in a way that was so, it really moved me. I really loved it. And I think, you know, one thing about me is that I really love non-traditional narrative storytelling. I love music videos. I love dance. I love getting to aesthetic, emotional places that aren't necessarily rooted in plot points. And there's so much story in Hedwig, but it doesn't unfold in a traditional way. And then of course, this is also, I was thinking about this film in the context of my own coming out story and like where it landed for me as far in my own sexual awakening. And I realized I saw this the year before I had my first girl crush. And I I want to say I owe this film a lot because I think it made it safer for me to come out. And I really mean that. I think that The Origin of Love, the way that John Cameron Mitchell sings this song, the way that they tell this story, the animation that goes with it was so beautiful, so pure of heart, so just like it just really went right to my heart and opened my heart. It cracked my heart open toward the different ways of loving people. And I think it primed me to be open-minded to the when I met Ana Lucía Martínez, my first girl crush, I was open to it. And it was like it set the stage for me to have open-mindedness about who I love and why. And so that's really, this film is meaningful to me on two pretty important levels. As artistically, I think it really inspired me. Not to mention the glam rock, the punk rock, the grungy, gritty aesthetics that go along with the glitter lip. I was so excited by this mashup of visuals, but then also on the story inside, like what it's really about, the story of Hedwig and what it means to become a whole person, and what it means to find your other half and who to love. Really, really got through to me on a personal level too. And so I think I can credit this film with like making my own coming out story a little bit softer, a little bit sweeter.
That's so beautiful. And I'm just thinking for our listeners who, whether they're older or younger, I just want to kind of set the stage maybe. 2001 for me, now I didn't live in New York at the time, but I recall how much it was such a turning point in terms of queer culture starting to really enter the mainstream, but it was still a really challenging time, especially compared to the representation that we have now. It was such an important turning point. And I feel like one of the reasons that this film has such a strong following is because it was really part of that zeitgeist at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I read something interesting that just yesterday I read about how the extended release for this film in theaters happened to coincide with a time when theaters post 9/11 were allowing free admission as like a morale boost. And so the film didn't end up getting box office numbers as it might have otherwise. But I don't know. I found that little stat interesting, because I think that I don't know that it was like the financial success that it deserved to be, but it did. I know that it landed in the hearts of many and is in the queer zeitgeist forever.
But the context
Yeah.
release of the film is very interesting,
Yeah.
because it's really
Yes.
a film about border crossing, about
Yeah.
crossing borders between physical borders like West and East Berlin, for instance, but also genders
Yeah.
moving fluidly from one gender to another. But it happened, it was released at a moment of extreme crisis in the United States, September 11th, 2001. I think this is interesting also in the fact that today, again, we are at a time, especially in the United States, where border crossing becomes very difficult. So I don't know if that's really a question, but well, how do you feel in relationship to this theme of border crossing and the situation of the country at the time of the release and today in the United States?
Yeah, that is so interesting. And I think that there is, rewatching this film last night, there's so much. While there is glam and while there is wigs and costumes, there's also this sense of there's disturbing imagery as well. The tomatoes, the close-ups on the mouths, the gummy bears, like the sort of there's a discomfort underneath it all as well, and there's complexity, and I do think that that speaks, like I felt like, wow, this is equally as relevant today as it was in 2001. I'm getting so much from it as far as like the struggle of what it means to feel divided inside. And I think we as a people right now feel very divided inside amongst each other, within ourselves. Like our attention is just taken by these distraction boxes. We're fighting each other online all the time. And that sense of fracturedness is very much all over the film, and very much inside of Hedwig. So I mean, I think that there's absolutely still and what a rich point to bring up the fact that we're in this moment of border issues once again. But I love that question of like, what are the borders externally and the borders internally, and how do we deal with those, and how do we, you know, I think it's an ongoing conversation and a question we have to be asking ourselves and each other every day, especially and especially in this time when border stuff is a mess. Like, and I mean, everything kind of feels like a mess. I feel that that really all we can do is talk to one another for real and have human to human interaction. It's like the only thing that's going to get us anywhere is our humanity, and real life conversation. And maybe at the end of the day, that's kind of what released Hedwig ultimately too, is having a face-to-face confrontation with Tommy Gnosis. Was having that conversation is what sets him free, sets her free. And anyway, lots to dig in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm just curious because you did see the film when it was released, and you're based in the US, and I've heard that the film now has a cult following, even though it didn't perform so wonderfully at the box office as one might have hoped. Can you tell me a little bit about how that feels? Do you have friends who love the film as well, or is it one that you kind of guard as a personal favorite, or how is that?
Well, I really associate my high school friends with this film because we saw it together in the movie theater and we were all equally obsessed. We were listening to the soundtrack. We were dressing up in like our own version of like punk fishnets with a belt and a skirt and a hat. And I was very, we were all very taken with the world of Hedwig. So I still think of them most of all when I think of this movie. And but for sure, and I feel very proud to say I love Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and I can't think of another person, and at least in my queer community, that would disagree with me.
Do you feel like for your generation, it's apt to draw a parallel with the Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is another film I love from the past, but times have changed.
Oh, totally apt. I mean, that moment when we get the sing-along with the little icon of the wig bouncing over the words, it's inviting us in. Please sing along with this movie. Please, you know, they're looking right, the band is looking dead into the camera, staring you down. You are invited into this world to be a part of it and sing along and make these songs your own. And I think now as an adult, I can watch that and like see how the film is doing that in its craft. But as a young 16, 17-year-old, I felt it. I felt compelled to sing along. I felt like I couldn't wait to put on the headphones and listen to these songs over and over again. And I felt very invited into it. And I think that that's what Rocky Horror and movies like this do, is they invite you in, come party with us, come be a part of this world, sing, enjoy, you know, watch it again and again and again.
And the film is a multiplicity of sorts, I would argue. There are so many references to Tommy, to David Bowie, to Iggy Pop, and so on and so forth. Do you also relate to these artists? Are those also elements that are important in your personal culture?
Oh, sure. I love when, I mean, all the references in the lyrics and then of course visually, incredibly important. And I think this is what's so fun about the film version of this piece of work. You know, I've seen the stage version equally as compelling. I absolutely love it. But this is such a good example of how the film medium can take something and just like emphasize everything that's great about it. And getting to see like when Hedwig is talking about tutoring Tommy Gnosis, and we get to actually see the picture of David Bowie, and visually look at his face, and then it's great. It layers, it brings the references out into front of screen. And yeah, I think I love pop culture, and I think it's thrilling to love pop culture and find references and Easter eggs and track it all. So absolutely important.
And what do you think of the relationship that Hedwig has with Tommy in the film, the way it evolves and the way it's depicted?
Oh, so good. God, that first scene when we meet Tommy Gnosis in the bathtub and Hedwig is carrying the baby and just it's so rich. I mean, what I love about the scenes that take place in between the songs is how they are emotionally complex. You know, there is nothing, again, going back to the way that the story unfolds, like the right away from the top with oh my God, forgive me, what is the character's name? Yitzhak, Hedwig's partner at the beginning, Yitzhak.
It's up.
You know, Yitzhak is like that scene when there's so much going on there. We're not even sure what's going on, but like there's the struggle with the wig. Are you longing for it? Or are you obsessed with it? Like, what is that dynamic? And then that, you know, there's it's and I feel like that's true with the Tommy relationship right from the get-go. It's complex. Hedwig's babysitting your younger sibling, you're giving a hand job in the bathtub. There's this, you know, we know that Tommy's coming from a religious background. So there's all of these tensions. Like, what is there's the age difference, there's the pouty lips, there's Michael Pitt just being like the saddest boy. It's also so rich. And I think that the way that we get Hedwig telling the story of Tommy in the voiceover, it paired perfectly with the flashback of the scene. It's like we get in there so quickly, and we understand the and we already know at this point when we already know that Tommy Gnosis is out there as this sort of arch nemesis, this person who's poaching the songs that Hedwig wrote. And then we get to learn, oh no, this the history here is deep, and no wonder it hurts so badly. Because you are intimately involved with this person. It's not just corporate greed. It's deeper than that. It's somebody stealing your someone you trusted stealing your stuff. Someone you trusted and also raised and taught and made better. And so, I mean, I think that on two levels gets at something that people can understand, which is like a toxic re love relationship, loving someone you probably shouldn't be loving, and doing too much for them because of it. Because you're attracted to them and you're hot for them and then like you see all this potential and you want to believe that it'll all work out and there's that pain and then there's like the pain of the corporate poaching of queer culture and like you know of something becoming mainstream not from the actual artist but from the sort of the straight Disneyfied version of it. Two things that I think are equally as relevant today and still going on. So I think the Tommy Gnosis, like the anchoring Hedwig's pain and suffering there in that last chapter is so powerful. It's so powerful.
I was personally thinking that Tommy is something almost a part of Hedwig in a sense, isn't he? He could be seen as a presentation of something that is inside Hedwig that he needs to admit and live with. Would you agree with this?
Absolutely. And I think that the last scene where Hedwig is has the cross on their face and basically becomes Tommy, it's like it is the meshing, it is the smashing together of the two parts to make whole. It is integration of all parts of oneself, both the parts that the pain, the mistakes, the history, the bad history, the good history, like sort of smashing it. There's an animation at the end where you see the two halves like come at each other in full speed and kind of explode. That's what that feels like to me, is like the anger that when Hedwig finally gets to perform at Rockefeller and it's so mad and throwing guitar and wreaking havoc, like that's the big explosion of it all kind of coming together until Hedwig can emerge naked and whole. At the end, and I think a big part of that is integrating the parts of Tommy Gnosis that were Hedwig. And I mean, not for nothing, Hedwig kind of created Tommy Gnosis. Like that was the not just the lyrics, but the name. And like this is a character that Hedwig did create. And in some ways, like, you know, it's not just about Tommy validating Hedwig in person and having that confrontation, and maybe like you know when they sing "Wicked Little Town" and Tommy, the words come out that like I know what I took from you. It's there's that, but then there's also maybe like just Hedwig confronting how bad that was, how painful it was, and it becoming less of a big bad under the bed, because now Tommy's right in front of her face, and like that's sometimes all you need to do is confront it, right? Is like look at dead on and stop chasing the injustice and the pain, but just sort of like, okay, that's what it is. I accept it and let it be big and explosive and hard and move through it and then free myself.
And you mentioned the animation. I was just wondering if we could chat a little bit about Emily Hubley's fantastic animation for the film, and that also was used in the stage performance as well. And I was thinking a lot about the fact that, on one hand, on the surface level, it represents mythology, and that's why we're kind of moving into this alternative medium. But we also talk a lot about how other forms like dance are sometimes used in film as a way to approach things that are difficult to dialogue about, maybe in a traditional narrative sense. And I'm wondering what you think about this relationship between animation and what it says in the film and how it's used.
The simplicity of the line drawings to me just make it makes everything feel bigger, even though it's so simple. I think it like in, it encourages you to like see the bigger picture of the and the bigger weight of Plato's story here. Less is more. Less is more.
Do you feel like you watch the film differently now that you're a filmmaker yourself compared to that first experience? How would you say you watch it differently if that's
Definitely.
the case?
Oh, definitely, definitely. No doubt about it. I think I know more now about what it means to make a movie, and so it's hard not to watch it and appreciate the way that they're lighting the bars with actual like clip-on Chauvet lights instead of, the things that we're using today, and just like I really appreciate the choice of the locations and how every like just the theme of them doing these gigs in like just the shittiest, smallest malls and restaurants, and like the cutaways to the people who are there watching. It's another reason why the film translation of this story is so wonderful, because we get these little details that we don't necessarily get on stage, like getting to flesh out the room of who's watching them perform. That little detail alone is so great. The lobster bibs. The lobster bibs at that restaurant, and the grimaces of most people, and then the occasional wig heads that are there, the fanatics who have the Hedwig hair on. All these things I appreciate, and just like I the sheer number of locations they have, I appreciate. They have so many locations, and like the ways that they pulled off telling this very big epic story of a huge character in a small intimate way. I just love it. I love it. I find it very inspiring, and I really love cinema like this, where you don't need like millions and millions and millions of dollars to tell a huge story.
Yeah, I think that the tension is very interesting between themes that go from Plato to Gnosis to classical mythology, but at the same time set in a very normal environment. This tension is wonderfully depicted. But I wanted to come back to what you said about Tommy. A bit earlier in the podcast, you named him his arch nemesis. And I was wondering, since Tommy Gnosis, if there wasn't something of an antichrist because of the cross and because of the references to Christianity there. What do you think?
Oh, sure. I could see that. I could see that absolutely. I love the exchange when Tommy asks Hedwig, "Have you accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior?" And Hedwig says, "No, but I love his work." It's perfect. But actually, God, there's so many funny moments. The stand-up that Hedwig does, the jokes are amazing, just one after the other. Really, really funny. But yeah, I could see Tommy as a bit of an antichrist, as as and maybe arch nemesis is too strong of a word, but I think Hedwig is functioning from a place of obsession at first. Like they're obsessively following the tour. There's like this Hedwig can't control herself. Like she's so mad, as reasonably so. Like it's justifiable. You're having to hear your music sung aloud to amphitheaters full of people. Like yeah, that would get you worked up too. But I think so maybe there is like Antichrist, arch nemesis. I would say Tommy is the complicated villain that you have that Hedwig has the hots for. Whether we call Tommy an Antichrist or just like an ex from hell, it's that's I think it's powerful either way. But that's like, these relationships that we have, like they can feel mythological level, like these we are in our own mythology. Like sometimes you have a lover that really does a number on you, and can and like getting over, moving through it can be a hero's journey.
I think that we can argue that we are all on our own personal hero journey, or on a path of integration of this Jungian mixing of the opposite sides of our personality, and you can find that definitely in the film.
And maybe we could talk a little
Absolutely.
bit about the music too. I know for my part, when I first heard the music, I just thought, who is Stephen Trask and where has he been? I mean, the music and the lyrics are so powerful. What do you
Oh,
think? And do you
so
have any
good.
favorites? Or I couldn't decide personally. I love the whole soundtrack.
I know, it's so good. It's so good. I mean, it all for me, it's all about the origin of love. That song is gorgeous. It's just beautiful. The words are perfect. The guitar that brings us in so like just gently. It's and then on top of it, how we go like from we pan out over Hedwig in bed with you talk, and then we're in the animation, and it moves me so deeply. And the crescendo of that song with the drums when Zeus said no, and it to me, that's my top. And then we get it. I think Midnight Radio is just perfect and gorgeous, and the perfect conclusionary anthem at the end, which feels like it feels triumphant, but it feels still like it has the heaviness of everything that we've gone through. And then I love the moment. I love oh, what I don't remember the title of the song, but the wig anthem. Put on some makeup, turn on the eight deck. What's the title of that song? I'm pulling the wig down. The main sing-along song. That is just from a storytelling pacing place, like we've just gone through this low point. Hedwig is left alone in a trailer park, with nothing. And the way that we transition into this song, that it becomes like the fighting song, right? It's like, no, we're gonna pick ourselves up, and we're gonna find strength in dress up, in wigs, in drag. And I love the spirit behind that. I love that message, like finding freedom and expression, finding a will to live in freedom of expression, like putting on all these different personas, Farrah Fawcett, the Beehive, like just playing with who am I? And you're alone and you're afraid, but you know what you do, what you have is you have yourself and you have your freedom of expression, and that's enough to get you out of this dark place. And so that song, I think, is also so incredible. And I love the change, the difference in tones, right? Like that is a little 1-2 step, like snap your fingers, clap along, and then we have like Angry Inch, which is this like punk rock, like wailing, just. Ah, it's so different. And so we just get the full journey in this music. We really get to go to a lot of places. And ultimately I feel like they take us and they land us in the perfect spot when we get the little reprise of Origin of Love at the end.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned how creative the The narration is how it takes you
Yeah.
into experimental territory. And sometimes we wonder if it's the music that is taking the story in a direction, or if it is the story that is bringing certain songs. I mean, they both interact with each other in a very creative way. And all of this following the thought process of Hedwig. It seems to me that he really
Yeah.
is the driving machine behind the story, and that the story evolves in episodic segments depending on what he remembers with the
Yeah.
flashbacks.
Yeah. It involves in segments is a good way to put it. There's like these, there's sort of these emotion, I would say like it's like emotional beats, but we're with Hedwig, and less about the plot points. And I would imagine that, I don't know entirely how that workflow was with between John and Stephen, but I imagine it was very back and forth because they do seem to integrate so perfectly together, the words and the music and like the bits of story that sort of take us just seamlessly into a song. It's like the songs come at the perfect time where I feel so ready for it every time it happens. I never feel like slapped in the face with a song. You know, sometimes musicals, you feel like, oh my God, we're having a song right now. That's not the way this feels to me. It just feels like just glides right in, and we're in. It's the so I really commend John for his artistry here, and for his sleight of hand, and for the way he just the pacing of everything is so seamless.
And visually too, it's extremely creative the way he deals with
Yeah.
from subjective points of view, or with the camera gliding over characters, or as
Yeah.
you mentioned,
Yeah.
showing a dog giving onto light, and lets us imagine what's happening beyond that door. I think that he did a great job,
Yeah.
visually speaking, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. And just very efficient, thoughtful camera work. You know, we're not, it's not the type of like crazy montage stuff. Maybe in some of the performances we're getting montage, but we're in a rock performance. Of course we want that. But everything, all the storytelling beats are actually very slow and patient with it's very thoughtful camera work. You know, when we're moving the camera, it's with reason. And I very much appreciate all of that.
And was this your first introduction to John Cameron Mitchell's work, or have you seen other films of his since that you appreciated?
This was my first introduction to John Cameron Mitchell, absolutely. And I was immediately obsessed. And I went on to follow his work. I'm a big fan. I think as a filmmaker and as a performer, I think John Cameron Mitchell is just brilliant. And also, let's just talk about his singing voice, because there is something so, oh my God, you just feel the heart behind his voice. You know, it is such a really, really emotional voice. There's so much humanity in his singing voice, and so unique. And I believe they recorded some of the audio live for this. I believe that like some of it was studio, but I mean, and I shouldn't be quoted on this, but I read somewhere along the way that they did record live audio during the songs, and I think that that makes a huge difference when it comes to like capturing the emotion in the voice, and matching it with the performance. So I think, you know, I'm a huge fan of John Cameron Mitchell. I love the way that I think he nails a tone that is like queer and campy, but he keeps it full of depth. You know, doesn't feel fluffy and schlocky. It's really weighted in great beauty and meaning. And so I really appreciate his sense of humor, the way he's mashing up tonally, he's mashing things up successfully in a way that feels like fresh and like something you've never seen before. And though that's not the easiest thing to do, is to like take tone and change the game and do something experimental and different while also like maintaining the heart of the story and getting through to an audience. Like, in a way that moves them. So I find great inspiration in his work, and I think he does that time and time again.
And I found that physically he had the energy of someone like Iggy Pop. Well, when his voice sounds at moments like David Bowie's, I don't mean
Oh,
to say that he
interesting.
copied them, but I really had the feeling that those were elements that were coming through his performance.
That he can equal them in that kind of energy.
I see that totally. Incredible performer. Oh my God, and the range of like stillness and just still delivering of a ballad versus like frenetic jumping around the stage, being crazy in the mood, like, really can do both. And it's so fun to see the range that he has.
And that reminds me of something that Jordan Peele once said, something about horror and comedy kind of being two sides of the same coin. And I was thinking about that a lot in relationship to Hedwig. And even if we can't say it's a proper horror film, I feel like there are a lot of allusions almost to body horror and psychological horror, the kind of resiliency that this character, shares in these terrible conditions that they've been given. And I'm just wondering what you think about that. I'm thinking now about your latest feature, Queens of the Dead, and thinking about that relationship between humor and horror, and where that kind of pathos can come in, despite the fantastic laughs and beautiful glam that we can experience at the same time.
And perhaps mentioning that,
Oh, totally.
sorry, just perhaps mentioning the fact
Oh,
that
no.
two films you had chosen that you were thinking about for this podcast were Shaun of the Dead on the one hand and Hedwig on the other, and that I had the feeling that it was somehow mixing the two elements one finds in Queens of the Dead.
Yes, Frank, I'm so happy you brought that up. It's true. Those are my top two contenders for things to talk about on this podcast, and I hadn't thought about it, but if you take those two, Shaun of the Dead and Hedwig and the Angry Inch, if they had a baby, it might look a little bit like Queens of the Dead, which and both of these films were highly influential to me. My dad used to talk about this a lot too, that the idea of horror and comedy being two sides of the same coin, and how, a laugh and a scream are both these involuntary reactions, and they both require a setup and then a punchline, and how they really can work gloriously together, and yet neither of them work if they're forced. Like there's a delicate line here. And so much, I guess, like all of life is a little bit about the duality and the two sides, and but like laughter and fear are just like they're two of the most raw human things we can feel. And so how glorious when we can and sit through a movie and get to have both. What a thrilling roller coaster to be on. And for sure I think about when you talk about like the how Hedwig might be edging up against horror, like for sure that shot of young Hedwig. By the way, sh shout out to young Hedwig. That act, that little child actor is incredible. Isn't in the movie that much, but every time he's on screen, it's delightful. But when he gets the tomato in his face and then like eats it off of his face, it's so gross and yet so like perfect. And I love that the film goes there because it's like you need to balance out the red glitter lip. In the same way that Hedwig, every time Hedwig is kind of drunk and doing a monologue outside in the parking lot, like the lips are just smeared, and like they're not afraid to go there and see like the smeared makeup. This imagery that's not all beautiful and glam and perfect, and I think that's just important because life isn't all a fantasy, as well. And in the same way, I think that like as big and glamorous as a character that Hedwig is, seeing the band perform in these like shitty restaurants also counterbalances that. And I think the counterbalance there just helps ground us as an audience in the reality of what's going on, which is like it's a complex story. It's a hard story A botched sex change operation. That's a big deal. Something that was forced upon Hedwig because she wanted to get out of East Berlin, only to get there and be abandoned to find out that the Berlin Wall came down. It's pretty tragic shit. There's definitely there's horrors in the story of Hedwig, absolutely. And then what strength to have all this shit go down, and then to put on the wig and to glamify yourself and get up in front of an audience and put on a show, even if it's one person holding a black umbrella in a field. Like that to me is that is strength. That is such power. And that is the power of drag. And the power of drag is something that has inspired me for a very long time. You know, in my own life as a DJ, where I came of age as a DJ in the queer community, where they're in the queer nightlife scene in New York City, where drag is very much part of it. You know, part, it's not, I always tell people like queer nightlife is about so much more than a great party. It really is historically a place of resistance. It is a place of people finding chosen family. It is a place where there's freedom of self-expression, and the ability to be oneself. So people ask me all my life, like, don't I want to make zombie films? Don't I want to make a zombie film? And I always said, no, I don't want to touch zombies. And I don't want to touch zombies. I want to do gender swapped Peter Pan. I want to do shark movie. I don't want to touch zombies. And because I didn't want to do zombies unless I could do it in a way that was authentic to me and in a story that I could tell. And there was a I one of these parties that I DJed often, I had a residency there, a beloved party called Hot Rabbit. There was a promoter rift that took place when one of the promoters broke off and started a rival party on the same night. It was big drama. And the original promoter posted a manifesto asking, when will the queer community stop devouring its own? And in that moment, it really hit me. It was like a bolt of lightning, just like they talk about. And I realized that this would be the way in for me to look at zombies, because I just think that queer nightlife is such a rich tapestry and a rich world to just to look at the zombie genre in, because it's full of incredible characters who are scrappy and creative and know how to make it work. And they're not necessarily fighters, but they are fighters in a different way. And so I wanted to, you know, that story of someone like finding their inner strength by putting a wig on was like the anchor for me. And rewatching Hedwig yesterday, I was like, oh my God, there's actually some similar themes going on. You know, my protagonist is a character that has to integrate as well, is looking for the both and, is looking to integrate the two sides of herself. And ultimately, you know, Hedwig takes the wig off at the end. Simonse in my film puts the wig on. But there it's a story of integration and about self-realization and self-empowerment and finding the fighting spirit within. And I think that for queer people, that can be an extra complicated journey, because you're not the roadmap that's set out for you in the world is doesn't match what the internal compass. And so you have to fight against, you have to kind of fight against everything you're being told, and really carve out your world for yourself. And so I think, you know, while that is a story that everyone must relate to on some level, I think that for queer people, when you're fighting, when you're swimming upstream, when you're fighting against the mainstream tradition, it's just you've got to dig a little deeper into into yourself to put on the boots and go forward every day. And then Shaun of the Dead, you know, Shaun of the Dead is just what I just think one of the most delightful zombie films ever made. It cracks me up top to bottom. It still is rich with commentary. And I just think that Shaun of the Dead did my dad right. You know, like of all the zombie things that have spawned from the monster that he presented to us in the 60s, Shaun of the Dead gets it. And you know, and it really felt like a true Valentine to my dad's monster. And so I have a huge affection for it because of that. And then I also think that Edgar Wright is a comedic genius. And I just I and a storytelling genius, and just like It's fun movie making. And that's what I love about Shaun of the Dead is that it is fun. You get your gore, you get your laughs, you get your kills, but you're having fun the whole time. And so to me, like the ideal mashup as a filmmaker is something that can, that has the moodiness and the aesthetics and sort of the non-narrative elements of Hedwig, but then you also get the like Friday night popcorn, wonderful kills and gore and like delightful romp that is Shaun of the Dead. And that's what I was, that's what I, that's it, and I don't think I could have articulated this before talking to you both today, but if I had to explain it, I think I that was my goal with Queens of the Dead, was to kind of find this place that landed in between these two films that are incredibly influential to me.
And it's about finding the strength to laugh in the face of horror, isn't it? I mean, it's like that scene
Yes.
in Hedwig
Yeah.
when his place of freedom is inside
Yeah.
an oven, which is both
Yes.
dangerous
Yeah.
and horrible,
Yeah.
isn't it? You don't know which way to go, really.
Totally. Yeah. Yes. I know. And then singing along to the radio, the doo-wop melody to be smacked in the face of the tomato. It's so both and. You're absolutely right. The place of safety inside the oven. Which I also can relate to, by the way. I always joke that my apartment is freezing in the winter and I don't do well in the cold, but I call my oven Sylvia, and I often, like in the winter, will just open her up and I'll scooch my laptop right over to Sylvia and I'll just tell people I'm emailing you from inside my oven.
So, congratulations on the release of the film, which premiered at Tribeca
Thank
this
you.
month.
Thank you.
When might our listeners, can you tell us a little bit about how that's going to work, cinematic release and all that?
Yeah.
Waiting in France with bated
Oh. Oh my God. I just can't believe this is real. I'm still pinching myself, to be honest. It's so exciting, and I'm so grateful to IFC and Shudder because they are, they're taking a chance on this little zombie movie that could, and they are going to give it a release. There will be a theatrical release, a limited theatrical release, and it will also be available on VOD, on demand in October of this year. So very soon, it's around the corner. And then in December, it will be going to Shudder and AMC Plus.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so just in time for Halloween and the
Yes.
winter holidays.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And I can't believe it. It's so surreal to see premiering it at Tribeca. Might have been the coolest day of my life. I honestly can't. Just seeing it big on a big screen was like a core memory unlocked. I'll never forget it. And then also to watch it with an audience that was accepting and loving. And I've been using a lot of pregnancy metaphors, as one might do when talking about film, but this is a long gestation period. It took me a long time to get this baby to term. And it was an intense labor, very quick and intense labor. And then it was out all of a sudden, and we had to share it with the world. And I was nervous to share the baby, but these first audiences that I've shown it to have been like, hand us the baby. We'll be gentle. We'll be nice. We'll be nice with the baby, and we'll hold her. And I'm so touched by that, because it's pretty terrifying to share your baby with the world. And so far, people have been very loving and receptive and nice. And to the point where, like, if it goes out to the wolves and the wolves hate it, I feel revived by the fact that like there's been this audience here who have taken something from it, and they've really enjoyed it. And I think that it's in these times, like these really crazy, scary, who the hell knows what's going to be on the news tomorrow times. I did want to make a film that felt light, that sort of sparked joy and didn't make you leave the theater wanting to go put your head in an oven. So I hope that that's I do hope that this film, while we are in the world of zombies, I would describe this film as a lighthearted zombie film that actually is about finding family and surviving and finding a little bit of light in the world. So I think it's an interesting mashup right there in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's true that when we
Yeah.
look at the world we live in right now, once again, we are faced with that same dilemma of not knowing whether we should be laughing at what's happening or just crying because it's so unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, Donald Trump, president of the
Yeah.
United States, I mean, that in itself is.
But we absolutely
Again, for the
need.
second time.
It's the return of the
Are we
dead.
towards
It's
it?
like, yeah.
No, but in all seriousness,
Exactly. That's exactly right.
we really need that right now, and we are really, really looking forward to seeing the film in Europe, and I'm sure our listeners who are a bit, spread out all over the world are also looking forward to the film hitting different platforms soon, whether it's in a cinema or via streaming, etc.
Oh God, thank you. And please, to anyone listening, I hope that you see the film. And this is the type of film that really does need audience support. It needs people to come watch it. And we have the people behind this movie. Really, I cannot say enough amazing things about the community of people who made this film happen. It is definitely a film by the queer community, very much about the queer community, but also very much for everybody. It is a party that we hope everyone feels invited to. It is not just for the gays, but I think that the way that we got it done is because we had a 90% queer crew, and there's just, like I said, there's no fighting spirit like the fighting spirit of the gays. And like, when even though we had $5 and some popsicle sticks to get it done, we figured out a way to get it done. And so for all of their sakes, I do hope that you watch the film.
Fabulous.
We can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
We usually close the podcast by asking our guests if there's a question that we should have asked.
Is there something you wish we had asked?
Oh my goodness. I think you asked incredible questions. Your questions were amazing, better than I could have ever imagined. Let's see. I can't think of one. I really can't think of a question that I wish you would have asked. I love every question you ask.
Thank
And
you
we
very
loved
much.
your answers. So thank you so much for spending time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. It's an honor. And thank you so much for having me. I
Yeah.
love this podcast. I have had such a good time listening to the episodes, and you're both delightful and so smart. And thank you for spending the time with me.
Well, thank you so much
Thank
for
you
your
so much.
artistry. We look forward to the film.
Thank you for listening to After Images. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast app and follow After Images podcast on social media.
Uh-huh.